Hey, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here with you, and it's always such a chizuk to see those who come out at night to learn with all the different obligations that we have, and I give you a tremendous amount of yasha koyach, and I have my admiration, and this itself is inspiring in its own right. But one of those topics that's always relevant and rabbis are always being asked about is the topic of secular music, and it's that issue that I wanted to explore with you this evening. Maybe we'll relate it to something that has to do with Inyana D'Yoyma on Purim as well. But with the issue of secular music really breaks down into a few different kinds of categories of music, and we'll try and go through them one by one. But the first really is, this I guess is the oldest form of secular music, and that is the kind of music that's of a religious nature and emanated from, you know, practices of Oivdei Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara tells us in Maseches Pesachim over here, source number one, with regards to items in the Beis HaMikdash that are holy and consecrated and therefore prohibited from being used for our own personal mundane purposes, certainly to handle it in you know, in a personal way and benefit from it in that form, or to eat it. In addition to those things, which are, you know, perhaps consume or violate the Kedusha of this item and therefore desecrate it and remove it from being, you know, serving as its purpose in the Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara tells us that even kol mara v'reach, even that which is smell, sight, or sound, which does not consume the item and is somewhat secondary or tangential to the use of the item, nonetheless, even though it doesn't have formal mi'ila, it's not a desecration of the kedush of the item itself because you're not really handling it in the classical sense. Nonetheless, isura ikah, it is prohibited from benefiting from the item that is in the Beis HaMikdash, that is holy, that is consecrated, even when it is smell, sight, or sound. So Rabbeinu Yerucham, who's one of the Rishonim, extrapolates from this precedent regarding items that are holy in the Beis HaMikdash that this perhaps should apply to other items that are prohibited in other forms of benefit for other reasons, like something that was used for Avodah Zarah, for idolatry practices, which of course is prohibited in all forms of benefit, would have the same rule that kol mara v'reach, even though you're not handling it directly, but smell, sight, and sound, would also be prohibited forms of benefit. So therefore, says in the Shulchan Aruch, it's in the Kuf Mem Beis, asur l'shmoa klei shir shel avodas kochavim, you're not allowed to hear music that is produced by instruments that were used for avodas kochavim, or l'stakel benoy avodas kochavim, or to enjoy looking at statues of avodas kochavim, kaven shenene b'ri'ah, because you enjoy the sight and the sound, you know, and the smells and all of that would be included within that prohibition of kol mara v'reach that we extrapolate from hekdesh to avodah zarah as well, which is also prohibited in Hana. And the commentary on the side of the Shulchan Aruch that I gave you over here on the brackets on the third line, he explains the commentary of the Beis Hillel. He writes that, of course, this is only if the item was actually used for avodah zarah. Then the instrument would be prohibited in benefit, and you'd not be allowed to listen to the songs that were produced. But even if it doesn't have the same formal prohibition, like the item itself is prohibited, even if there is no item necessarily to speak of, you have a human being, and human beings, of course, cannot become prohibited. Even if that human being worships Avodah Zarah, he doesn't become prohibited in benefiting from that human being. The music that he produces would still be, if it's the music of an Avodah Zarah, would still be prohibited to listen to that music. So he writes over here on the end of the third line, "Nira dehu adin hakol shal akum hamizamer avodas elilim, a non-Jew who's singing the songs of an Avodah Zarah, gam ken aser kemo klei shir shal avodas elilim." Just like the music that would be produced by these kinds of instruments. And even though the person themselves is not prohibited in Hana, because after all, he's a person, v'yafal gab de gabi ko bepeh lo shayich, Gabi hektish, dein hektish, shayach gabi b'nei adam. There's no such concept as a person being consecrated and therefore removed from other forms of, you know, prohibited and benefit in the classical sense. Avagabi avodas elilim, nirad im ha'akum mizamer avodas elilim, yesh lo hanami kolav ugam kenaser. So to hear religious music that is either being played by an instrument that's used as part of the Avodah Zarah, or even if it's just the songs of an Avodah Zarah that's being sung in a different context, you know, by a person without any instruments that are participating, would of course be prohibited, extrapolated, derived from that same principle that we had with regards to items that belong to the Beis HaMikdash, that kol mara v'reach, sounds, sight, and smell, even though they're not direct forms of benefit, would still be prohibited. What's interesting here is the Shach on the second line writes, of course, the second line of Os Beis, that this is only if the item was part of the Avodah Zarah itself, part of the official service. But if it's not part of the official service of the Avodah Zarah, it's a song, it's carols, that I'm not an expert in, you know, other religions. I don't know if it's part of the official service or something that just contributes to the general culture, that surrounds the religion. But the Shach writes, if it's not part of the official service of the Avodah Zarah, part of the official format of that, of that particular religion, that's not the way that it's worshipped, so then, you know, it wouldn't be, or have this formal prohibition of the label of Avodah Zarah itself, and it wouldn't be prohibited in Hana. At the same time, even if you have a nigun, you have tunes, that are not part of the official service and forms of worship of this religion, if it's part of the general culture of the religion, so it might not be usur and hana in the formal sense, but it would run afoul of a different problem, of a different prohibition. And that's based on the pasuk in Parashas Kedoshim. Over here, Ois Gimel, the Gemara Masechta Shabbos, and Kuf Mem Tes Med Aleph, comments on the pasuk, Al Tifnu El Ha Elilim. A person should not turn his heart towards Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara comments, Al Tifnu Kel Midaschem. A person should not expel the Ribbono Shel Olam from his thoughts, meaning he shouldn't divert his thoughts from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and focus his thoughts and his interests in other areas, primarily in Avodah Zarah. So one is not supposed to express any interest. Here the Gemara is discussing looking at statues of Avodah Zarah, not the kind of statues that were themselves the focus of the worship, but part of the general culture and art and perhaps philosophy and mythology and all that go, you know, would represent images and messages that are part of the religion, you know, in general, but not official item of service necessarily. So it wouldn't be formally usur the hana, it wouldn't be prohibited in forms of benefit like Avodah Zarah itself, but it's part of the general bigger picture. So for a person to express any kind of interest in those items, music included, would be a problem, if not benefiting from Avodah Zarah, but a problem of al tifnu el ha'alilim, a person is showing an interest, averting his attention from the Ribbono Shel Olam, and showing an interest in other religions. The Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah writes that included within this is to investigate other religions. And that's why it's a person who does that and is involved in that kind of a field of comparative religion studies and all these kinds of things is a very thorny issue. And a person has to navigate that correctly with a paisek, making sure that you're doing it appropriately, because to study other religions because you're interested in them itself is a severe problem of al tifnu el ha'alilim. It was actually a debate 40 years almost, between Rabbi Parnas. Rabbi Parnas was a Rosh Yeshiva in YU who was one of the founding Rosh Yeshivas in Lander College for Men when they started. He together with Rabbi Braunschweigel. So, but when he was in YU, so he was very active in this area, and had a debate with Dr. Lee. I don't know if you know who Dr. Lee was, but Dr. Lee was the chairman of the English department for decades in YU. So in the 80s, when the Torah Mada project was just getting started, they put out this Torah Mada journal. Sure, it's available in the library. So in the early volumes of the Torah Mada journal, he had a back and forth. This was in the heyday of Torah Mada. Dr. Lee was writing, who was not Jewish, was writing in the Torah Mada journal about what halacha should state about studying other religions and things like that. And he was debating with Rabbi Parnas. So Rabbi Parnas wrote, I don't know if it was prior to this or in the midst of that debate, wrote to Rabbi Moshe about it. And Rabbi Moshe has a few tshuvas to Rabbi Parnas in one of the volumes of Yeridea about these issues. So a tshuva that's written to Rabbi Parnas, Ramosha over here, Oizdala, discusses the issue of listening to non-Jewish music. So Ramosha outlines both of these prohibitions. He writes, of course, if the music is produced by instruments that were used for Avodah Zarah, or the songs themselves, even if it wasn't instruments that are, in the base of Avodah Zarah itself, or part of the official service, but the nigunim, the tunes that are being sung, are part of the official service, then it would be prohibited in Hana, just like an item that's consecrated to the Beis HaMikdash is prohibited in Hana, and included in that is to hear, to use it for music, even though, you're not touching it or handling it, but Kol Marav Areach, smell, sight, and sound are also called benefiting. So to over here, you have an item that's prohibited in Hana because it was used for Avodah Zarah, would also be prohibited in benefiting from it, even if it's just the sound that it produces. And even though the person who's singing these nigunim can't be an item that's prohibited in Hana, the nigunim themselves that are used for Avodah Zarah should not be sung and are treated like an item or something, that is prohibited in Hana. But then Rav Moshe writes that even if the nigun, over here on the third line of Ois Dalin, the imrak nigun me anoshim shemizamim ma'akum, they're singing to their Avodah Zarah, but it's not part of the official service and worship. So it wouldn't be an Iser Hana at the end of the third line of Ozdalin. Certainly it is prohibited to express an interest in secular, in religious music of another religion, or to contemplate their forms of service. Of course, this would be prohibited. So Rav Moshe writes, of course, this is included in al tifnu el ilum, if not formally the iser of the iser hanah. So let's say to a person enjoys, those who go around caroling during Christmas time. I don't know if that's part of the official service of the religion, but certainly there are some who puts people in a good mood. People are shopping. People are happy. So yeah, but that's problematic. That's problematic. It's certainly associated with the religion, even if the tunes are somewhat secular and some of the themes are secular. Doesn't seem really to be within the spirit of al tifnu el halilim. Seems to be somewhat inappropriate. There used to be at the top of Washington Heights, there's a park called Fort Trine Park. I don't know if you ever came across it, but it's and in there there's a church which isn't used anymore. I think it's now it's a museum, but they have art. I think it's an art museum, and there's religious art there. So I remember when Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was still alive, Tzadik Avrocha was a Rosh Yeshiva in YU for many years, the Rav's brother. So in the late 90s, I happened to be sitting at the table. He sat in the front of the Beis Medrash. I remember they came, one of the clubs, and YU wanted to go and visit the cloisters, because it's right there, I think with the art club or something. And Rav Aaron Soloveitchik told them they're not allowed to go, because what are you going for? He said, it's all religious art. So you're going to show and express an interest in the way that their art, their culture, even if it's not necessarily part of the formal services itself, which would be Asur B'Hanah, it certainly smacks of Al Tifnu El Lilim, and it's something that should be avoided. It's certainly diverting your attention from the Ribbono Shel Olam and showing an interest in other religions. And that would apply to the music as well. What if, though, it really doesn't have any religious component to it? There's no, I guess it's not really our culture, but it's loosely associated with it. And the people who are singing with it, singing those Nigunim, don't really have any religious intentions at all. So that's where Rav Moshe addresses over here on the fourth line of Vayisdavar, Al Cheshmoy Hanigun Hazem Pi Anoshim Ke'egu She'ei Miskavnu L'Avodah Zarah. It's not even part of their, not only not part of the official service, the people who are singing it don't really have any intention for the Avodah Zarah. With Zamar B'Alma, it's loosely associated with religion, but they're not singing it for that reason. Av She'ei Bazeh Isur, even though, okay, maybe there is, run afoul of either one of these Isurim. Nonetheless, Rav Moshe writes, Mechuar Hadavar, such a thing is really distasteful. So religious music, or music that emanates from a religious source and is associated even loosely with another religion, at best is mechuar hadavar, is really distasteful, could run, be a problem about tifnu aligum, showing an interest in other religions, and if it's part of the official service, could really be, asur b'hanah. And therefore, any kind of religious music, one has to be really, really careful about. The Gemara says in Maseches Chagiga, actually, over here, Oisei, that Acher was Elisha ben Avuya, one of the Tanoim, famous episode, who ended up, leaving the path of Torah and mitzvahs. So what led, the Gemara discusses or is concerned, what led him to, who was one of the greatest Tanoim, led him to leave the path of Torah and mitzvahs. So the Gemara says, Zemer Yavni lo pasik mipume. Greek songs were constantly on his mouth, constantly being sung, constantly being hummed. So Rashi there explains, what's the problem with the Greek tunes that he was singing? And Rashi explains that it's because he was failing to mourn the loss of the Beis HaMikdash properly. The Gemara says in Masechtas Gittin, this is really a whole separate discussion, is that one of the gzeros that they made after the Korban Beis HaMikdash was not to listen to music. And therefore, many poskim discuss, it's in the Shulchan Aruch, how is it that we are able to listen to music at all today, given the fact that one of the prohibitions that they made, Zeichel Korban, was not to listen to music, not to be, overly, rejoiceful or happy. How can we be so happy when there's no more Beis HaMikdash? So one of the examples they made was not to listen to music, and that's a whole separate discussion. What are the heterim, possible leniencies that we have today to listen to music at all, any kind of music, given the fact that this is one of the things they're prohibited because of Korban Beis HaMikdash. So Rashi there says what he was doing wrong was, he was listening to music even after the Korban HaBayis. The Marsha disagrees with Rashi. That's the commentary in the back of the Gemara, one of the Achronim. Disagrees with Rashi. He says, if that's the case, why did the Gemara focus on the fact that they were Greek songs? They just sort of said he was listening to songs. If it doesn't matter, if it's irrelevant as to what kind of music he was listening to, and he was just listening to any kind of music, seems to have been problematic in its own right. So it sounds like from the Gemara that it has something to do with the fact that it was Greek songs, and therefore the Maharsha claims that it's because these songs contained themes of minos, of heresy. And there was those themes that even though he wasn't, you know, listening to them for that reason, but he absorbed them, you know, even without realizing it, perhaps, willingly, the messages seeped in. And because of that, ultimately led him to leave the path of Torah and mitzvahs because he was listening to this kind of harmful music. The Maharsha actually claims that this is supported by the context of the Gemara, because if you look at the end of the first line, the Gemara says that wasn't the only thing he was doing. He was reading books of Sifrei Minim. They were like falling out of his backpack when he was walking down the hall. You know, sometimes people are carrying too many books and things are slipping and falling if you can see what the person's reading. So we all saw he was reading books he shouldn't have been reading. So if he's reading books he shouldn't be reading, he was probably listening to music he should have been listening to with the same kinds of themes. And that's, you know, that was the problem. So Maharsha kind of drives the point home that this music can be really harmful. This, you know, music that emanates from a kind of religious source. It could be problematic because of an Isur Hanah. Or at least maybe al tifnu el ha'aligum if it's not part of the official service. Ramesh writes, in any form, it's mechuar hadavar, even if the person's singing it without any kind of religious intention and it's not coming, you know, in that context. It's not couched in those terms. And the Maharsha here reinforces how spiritually harmful it can be to listen to this kind of music. Okay, religious music, we kind of dealt with. What if it's regular non-Jewish music, the kind, you know, garden variety non-Jewish music that we're accustomed to? It's not, you know, it's not coming from a religious source at all. What we call, you know, they call Shirei Agavim, regular secular music. What's the story with that? So the Sefer Chassidim writes over here, Simon Tavshin Samaches over here, the sixth source. V'yizar misha yeshol kol noim. A person who has a beautiful voice has to be careful. Shelo yizamer nigunim nachrim. He shouldn't sing non-Jewish songs. Ki avera hi. It's a sin. It's a avera. Why? Kach nivra kolo noim l'shabeach bara. A person who's blessed with a beautiful voice should use it to sing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like any person who's blessed with any kind of unique gift has to understand that it was given to him or to channel towards Avodas Hashem in the proper way, any kind of gift. So having a beautiful voice is no different, and a person has to try and channel it into a way that serves the Ribbono Shel Olam and not by singing these kinds of songs. What's the Avera, though? What's wrong about it? So there's a sefer called Reishis Chachma. Reishis Chachma was a contemporary of the Ari HaKadosh, late 1500s. Same school, the Talmidim of Rav Moshe Kordovera. So over here, Isaiah writes the Reishis Chachma, that it's because in these songs you typically find inappropriate themes and lyrics. He says, Shehem Divrei Cheshek V'Nivol Peh. It's Nivol Peh, his romantic themes, and it's problematic. So Garmin Lahafrida Neshama Mitzor HaChaim, and leads us astray from the Ribbono Shel Olam and to, you know, think about things that are Pchusei Erech, that are not worthy of our time, and Imshachim Acharei Hashirim, and therefore people get involved in these songs, and it develops a whole culture that has nothing to do with Yiddishkeit. So it leads a person, and Adarabba, it leads a person down the wrong path, down the path of Averus. So therefore, says Reish HaShlachma, that's the problem with these kinds of songs that have inappropriate themes and lyrics that it leads a person, of course, away from Torah and the mitzvahs. This is quoted, Sefer Chassidim, Reish HaShlachma, nice sources, but this is quoted in the Ramah. Ramah here is discussing in Simen Nun Gimel and Archaim who is fit to be a Shliach Tzibor, to lead the congregation in davening. So the Ramah writes over here on the eighth source, Vishatz, Shliach Tzibor, Hamenabel Piv, who speaks Nivol Peh, O Shemiranein Beshirei Nachrim, he sings, not Jewish music, Mimachim Beyodor. We protest against him from being the Shliach Tzibor and attempt to remove him, or we persuade him, Shloi Lasos Kein, not to do this any longer, Vimeina Shemea, if he refuses to acquiesce, Mavir Nosei. Then we have to remove him from his post. Now it's clear, I think, from the Ramah, that what he's talking about is a person who is not singing these songs during davening. He's singing these songs in his spare time, outside of davening. We see him, you know, before he walks into shul, humming this kind of secular music with Nivol Peh and all the inappropriate themes. And then he comes in and he walks up to the front of the shul and acts as the Shliach Tzibor. So that kind of individual is not appropriate. He's not leading the proper lifestyle that deserves this kind of communal position of being the Shliach Tzibor. But he's not actually singing this during davening or using these tunes during davening. However, the Mishnah Berurah goes in a... That's clear what the Ramah is talking about. Otherwise, how is there Nivol Peh in the middle of Kedusha? How did Ashrei become Nivol Peh? So it must mean that he's using Nivol Peh outside of Shul, and this is not a person who has the, you know, appropriate resume to serve as a Shliach Tzibor. The Mishnah Berurah here, in the brackets of the eighth source of Osches, takes this in a different direction. It says, Rotzeh lomar, ben nigun shehanochrim menagnim boi lavodes gelulim. He's using during davening songs that emanated from the base of Avodah Zarah, from other religions, and he is converting them into Jewish nigunim. That's what he's using in the middle of davening, and that is deserving of, you know, then he should be removed from his post for using those kinds of nigunim. So here the Mishnah Berurah switches our focus from what the guy's practices are outside of shul and his religious standing there to what is he doing while he's davening. But here the Mishnah Berurah limits it not to regular non-Jewish songs, but to songs of Avodah Zarah, which we already explained are really problematic. And that's what he's using during davening, attempting to convert those nigunim, and that we can't accept at all. The question, though, emerges, right? So you're not supposed to sing these songs that we got because of the inappropriate themes and lyrics. It's a person away from the path of Torah Mitzvahs and our entire value system. But what if you want to take that nigun and use it, try and convert it, then use it during davening? So we saw, Mishnah Berurah says, well, if it was a song of another religion, it really has no place. I don't need to give examples, right? But really has no place in shul. But what if it's a secular song, you know, with probably some lyrics that are objectionable and themes and overtones for sure. And can we use that nigun? It's a nice song, right? People, talented composers, and use that and channel that, you know, into shul with words and change the words and use the lyrics of of kedusha and other parts of tefillah. So this is an old debate. It goes back to the period of the chida, hundreds of years ago, over here in the Birkei Yosef, over here Ois Tes, ninth source. He quotes from the Maaser Rekeach. You see the underlined section. Al hamishayrim kaddish uKedusha lechein shirei nachrim. They're singing kaddish and kedusha to non-Jewish songs. The Herich Lesser. His opinion is that this is prohibited. Not a Jewish song. How does this belong in the middle of davening? On the third line, you'll see he criticizes the Maaser Rekeach. V'ne'ela mimenu divrei maram di lunchano. He says the Sefer Maaser Rekeach missed this other one of the Achrenim, who heard that there were those who were objected to the practice of using these secular songs in davening, together with, of course, Dvarim Shebekdusha. And he says there are those who are opposed to it. They feel that it's desecrating the Dvarim Shebekdusha, the Kaddish and Kedusha. But he writes at the end, Ve'ein hadin imam. They're wrong. Ki ein bekach klum. There's no problem doing this, taking the nigun, another abba. You're converting the nigun and using it for Dvarim Shebekdusha. There's no problem with that. So it's an old machlekes, achreinim, here in the Birkei Yosef. Not surprising, it's a machlekes, achreinim, today. Is this practice frowned upon, or is this, approved? Is this okay? Is this permitted? Rabbi Avadi Yosef has a tshuva in a few places, where his opinion is that this is allowed. You can take a secular song, a tune, and use it for, Dvar Kaddish or Kedusha or something else in davening. Other Paiskim, the Tzitz Eliezer, who was a contemporary of Rabbi Avadia, Rabbi Waldenberg, who was opposed to this practice. There's a long tshuva, some of you met him, Rabbi Yaakov Hillel, who's a well-known Makubo. He visits New York every once in a while. Well, we once hosted him in our shul. So he has tshuva called Vayoshev Hayam, and he writes there 30 pages, like a whole treatise on this issue, that he feels it's highly objectionable. He's not happy about the practice at all. And he sent it to Rabbi Vosner, who was a great Pesach from the last generation. And Rav Vosner, it's funny, he sends him 30 pages. Rav Vosner responds in 5 lines, meaning basically, you wrote enough about it. He said, I love everything you wrote. I agree. So it's high sign on. That was it. He didn't deal any longer with the issue. So there are many Pesachim who are opposed to it. I found something I thought was fascinating, which is from the Tzanzarov. This is the Divrei Chaim, who actually lumps this together with another practice that has reemerged in recent times, and that is of having a choir. Choirs were something that existed in the shuls a few hundred years ago in response to different trends outside of the Jewish community that were making inroads into the Jewish community. There was an attempt to satisfy people in the shul and make it more similar perhaps to other, to what their expectations were. Perhaps those were misplaced expectations, but there was a certain mood that they were trying to address, and there were those who were opposed to any of these kinds of innovations in the shul and things like that. And one of them was the choir. So writes the Divrei Chaim over here. Shamati asher niskabel obeis haknesis to chasidim. I heard in a certain community of chasidim, shebekahalchem shliach tzibur, that they have a chazan im mizamrim with a choir, with those who sing together with them, not related to the contemporary group known as mizamrim. same idea, I guess. Mizarmim typically come to shuls, you know, to serve as people who sing. A lot of our congregations fail to sing b'chol. They don't understand how to sing along. So you have to have someone singing. So, you know, an ilam. So it's not a choir in the traditional sense. It's just people singing together with the shliach tzibur that makes the davening nice. So that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about a choir. He says, I'm stunned that you thought that this was, you know, a positive thing to bring back into shul. It took us forever to remove this wart or this blister on the community. And he was so happy that it got removed. And now here you are bringing it back. He didn't think that that was a positive innovation, which I thought is fascinating, because if you know, in Chassidus circles, choirs are something that they bring out that, you know, for in order to enhance the mood at different occasions. And here the Divrei Chaim, one of the, you know, the great tzaddikim of the, you know, original founders of Chassidus, and here he is opposed to that practice. But then at the end, he turns his attention to the nigunim that they're singing, and he writes, of course, some of the nigunim that they're singing come from Divrei Shirei Cheshek HaNizamrim B'Tar Taros. These are romance songs, romantic songs that they heard in the theaters, and here they are bringing it into shul. V'oy lohem l'psalim halolu. He says, woe to them, to these fools, that they're bringing these songs here into shul. So this practice was frowned upon by many. Rabbi Avadi Yosef takes a more permissive tone. If you know anything about really Chassidish music, even in more of a, you know, general Jewish music, you know that this is done in certain circles. Like many of the Chassidish marches or nigunim that are popular Chassidish circles, the classic Chassidish nigunim, came from elsewhere. They were army marches. In fact, Balatanya, who was the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, lived around the same time as Napoleon. And when he heard Napoleon's victory march, he thought it was so inspiring that he integrated it into the tefillahs of Yom Kippur in the Chabad davening. So after Yom Kippur, at the end of davening, to symbolize the fact we feel we were victorious with Hashem in our davening, and we're assured to have, we're confident we're going to have a good year, they would sing the victory march before, you know, moving on to Maariv after Ne'ilah and Yom Kippur. So, you know, obviously the Baal HaTanya felt that this was something that was, you know, that was okay to integrate some of these marches of Napoleon and the like. And the last Lubavitcher Rebbe explained that they felt that you could convert a Nigun, a Gerus of the Nigun. Came from non-Jewish source, but we could convert it for Jewish purposes. However, even the Lubavitcher Rebbe himself, who felt that this could be done, cautions that it should only be done with two provisos, with two conditions, and that is that it should be done together with rabbinic authority. Shouldn't be everybody using their favorite playlist, you know, that they happen to get up to daven and they like this song, you know, and therefore they're going to throw it into davening. And it should really be at a point in time when no one remembers where the niggun came from. See, like now, it could be surprising to many to know that Chassidish nigunim really came from some secular source. Yeah, so if it's you have to be an archivist, a librarian, you know, or aficionado to know that this music came from a secular source. That's good. That means that we can convert it, and we no longer remember it's goyish past. But if we remember it's sinful past, and everybody in davening when they're singing, you know, it's a small world, is thinking about the nigunim of it, you know, the lines, the lyrics. If it's a small world, and that's the best, right, of the possible song choices. So that's really unfortunate, because then in the middle of Kedusha, instead of thinking about the words of Kedusha, here everyone is thinking about it's a small world or whatever other kind of you know, song happens to pop into people's head. So that's you know, that is with those two conditions, the Lubavitcher Rebbe thought it could be, you know, it could be done. So secular music in general, if it has inappropriate themes and lyrics, certainly seems to lead one in the wrong direction, is against, you know, the ethos of what Yiddishkeit stands for, and we should expose ourselves to good influences and not harmful influences, and this is certainly a harmful influence. But even to take the nigunim and then convert them to become, you know, for Shirei Kodesh and to use them for the Kodesh and Kedusha itself is somewhat controversial, and there's legitimate paiskin perhaps on either side of the issue. But even those who are lenient caution that it should really be at a time when no one remembers this song as a, you know, in its original form. If everyone remembers it, it's still on the top 40 billboards, it's really too soon. You know, and then it's when someone jokes about something that's, you know, that's too sensitive, you know, it's too soon. This is too soon to really be using this in Kaddish and Kedusha. You have too many people, you know, thinking about the original song in the middle of shul. Is really, especially if the themes and lyrics are inappropriate, is really something that is distasteful. You'll say, yeah, but there's lots of Jewish groups that do this. I don't need to mention their names, right? Lots of Jewish groups take the most popular songs that have lyrics and themes that were, you know, that are inappropriate or borderline, certainly not, you know, innocuous, and they're, you know, converting it and they make a whole industry out of it. So I'll tell you, I don't know how many of them ask shilas, but just because something is out there and just because someone minted a CD doesn't necessarily mean that it has rabbinic approval. And many have expressed their frustration and then, you know, their disapproval of this practice. It really is a little bit too soon. Yeah, what do you want to say?
Where do you get the idea that, there has to be something forgotten because the Kabbalah study was at the same time as Napoleon?
Right, so they asked Lubavitcher Rebbe that, and Lubavitcher Rebbe said, "Good, if you are the Baal HaTanya, you can do that." Which I understand is kicking the can. It's not really fair, but to a certain degree, it is fair because first of all, I think a march is different, and we'll get to in a second stuff that has no lyrics at all, right? And I don't know how many people at the time knew. It's not like they had playlists; they didn't know. The Baal HaTanya traveled the world. The rest of the Chassidim didn't really travel. They didn't know Napoleon's victory march. He knew it because he was, he was put in jail and had to travel around to different things to run for, you know, from different people. But stuff didn't circulate as fast as it circulates today. So I don't know how many people knew about it. And I think if it's done with rabbinic kind of authority and approval, it takes on a different framing of the issue as opposed to some maverick who gets up at the middle of davening and sings a song that the rabbi doesn't recognize because he didn't see that movie or he doesn't listen to that album, and everyone else is laughing, and the rabbi's like, "Oh, what is this nigga? I never heard of it." You know, I know people, right? This has happened. So that's not really, and wow, we're pulling the wool over the rabbi's eyes. That's bad. You know, I don't think that's good. Or even, you know, who can be the most creative Jewish lyricist and make lyrics to the most, all 40, top 40 songs on, you know, the Billboard? Yeah. We have to think about, what are we doing? Are we really just koshering, you know, giving another, you know, putting lipstick on a pig, or are we koshering the niggin in a way that's productive for Yiddishkeit? So I think that that's the tension here, and I think that that's we've seen people cross the line. Sometimes I don't know if we have to throw out every all of them, but I think that there is, you know, you basically get the point. But let's say something again. We've addressed two categories so far: religious music, secular music that has harmful themes and lyrics. What about if it's not harmful themes and lyrics? It's innocuous. Or it has something that maybe is, you know, I don't want to give examples, but, you know, the old time, the Beatles, the Yellow Submarines and stuff. It's innocuous music, Cats in the Cradle, I don't know. You know, whatever it is, old music is no, maybe I'm missing something in these songs. You know, whatever, let's say it's innocuous. Let's say you could have a song entirely innocuous, maybe has some positive message about parenting or your life in general and whatever. Or it's entirely instrumental. There are no lyrics and themes at all. It's entirely instrumental. So what's our attitude towards that? So in order to really understand the approach of halacha to these things, we need to take a step back, rewind, and really understand, you know, why is music such a powerful force in religion in general? Why does it occupy such a central role in Yiddishkeit as well? So one of the earlier sources about this is the Maver Yabok, who was a Talmud of the Ramami Panu, the Italian Kabbalist. Many of our Menhagim, this is not an obscure source, it's a quite basic source, even though it doesn't get quoted by name too often, many of our Menhagim related to, you know, different areas of Jewish life are found in the Maver Yabok. So the Maver Yabok writes over here, Oysir Aleph, HaNeshama Nehnis Mehanigun, the soul enjoys Anigun, Lefisha Hi Regila Benigune B'Shir Shemalacha Yasharis V'Shir HaGilgolim. When the body, before a person is born, the Gemara says in Masechtas Yevamos, when a person is born, there's a neshama that's paired together with a body, but prior to that, the neshama resides in an area of Shemayim known as the guf. In fact, the Gemara says Mashiach will come when all of the neshamos have been removed from the guf, meaning when all of them have been sent down to the world. So then, you know, Mashiach will come, but Mashiach is waiting for all of the neshamos to leave the guf. But while they're in Shemayim, the neshamas reside in this area of Shemayim called the Guf. But while they're there, waiting in this repository to be paired with a body, they hear what's going on, the surrounding sounds. And what's the, you know, the background noise in Shemayim is singing. Who's singing? The Malachim are singing to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the neshama, while it's in its purest form, before it's been paired with the body, hears these nigunim, and that becomes its native tongue. And therefore, the language of the neshama is song, is music. This is echoed by the Manos Halevi, which is a Shlomo Halevi Alkabetz, the author of the Lucha Dodi, a contemporary of the Ri'ah Kodesh, also in Sfas, same time, the late 1500s. And he writes over here in his commentary, Megillas Esther, he's discussing why was there no music at the Suda of Achashverosh. There's lots of different things. There were fancy kalim. The Megillah mentions nothing about music, so he's wondering, curious, why is there no music at the Suda? And in the course of his discussion addressing that issue, he writes, Shehayu ha-muzika v'anigin dover ye'ari v'nefesh v'sibas ha-yoyis v'murgalas v'shama zos b'yos v'marom. The neshama is used to hearing these songs while it's in Shamayim. So he says, and that's how they became accustomed to them, and that's why, you know, it speaks to the soul in that kind of a way. This is based on the Gemara Masechtas Chagiga, if you turn the page, to Osir Dalet, where the Gemara says, Ko yuma v'yuma, every day, nivra malachi ashares, every day there are malachim that are created, v'amri shira ubatli. Their whole job, their whole existence, is to sing shira to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and then they vanish. But that's the purpose of malachim, is just to sing shira, and that's what's going on in Shamayim. In fact, the Zohar says over here, Ois Tezvav, that there's different chambers in Shamayim, different hechalois, and one of them is a hechal negino, the chamber of music, or chamber of music, but I don't think it means that. No, what it means is there was an area in Shamayim where they were just singing nigunim, and the neshama, before it gets paired with the guf, is basking in this noise, and therefore that becomes the language, the native tongue of the neshama. In fact, the Shlomo Levi Alkabet says something fantastic over here at the end of Ois Gimel. He says that that's why people calm down. If they're excited, they're bothered, anxious, if they hear music, it's a calming, soothing experience because that speaks to the neshama. The neshama is riled up. You hear the songs, you know, a person hears the mother's voice or whatever. They hear that lullaby they used to hear when they were a kid, and it calms them down. So this, all music has that ability because this is really the native tongue of the neshama. And then he continues, and he says that's why some people become tired and fall asleep when they're listening to music, because the neshama is active, the guf is passive, because music speaks to the neshama, it doesn't speak to the guf, and therefore the guf just bothers falling asleep out of boredom, because the neshama is active, and the guf is passive, and that's why you fall asleep when a person listens to music, which I thought was a fascinating ha'ara. But anyway, that's the purpose, you know, that's why music is such a powerful tool, is because it's used in the, you know, that's where the, you know, the malachim are singing in Shamayim, that's what the guf, that's what the human neshama as well becomes used to. That's why in the Beis HaMikdash, part of the avoda is singing. There were two groups of Leviim. Some were Meshoyarim, some guarded the Beis HaMikdash, and some were Meshoyarim, some were those who sung. And singing was integral to the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, because in Shamayim, in the Beis HaMikdash Shomala, there's singing that's going on. So too in the Beis HaMikdash Shomata, you know, they are Mechuvan Zeh Keneged Zeh, they are opposites one to the other. That's the connection between this world and the world in Shamayim. So since they are parallel, there are connections between the two. So just like they're singing Lamala, they're singing Lamata too. And this all comes from the Malachim, as we say during time, Mechuvan Postim, you know, V'Ava, V'Shira, V'Zimra, they're all opening their mouths and singing and, you know, and praising the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that singing and praising speaks to the neshama, because that's where, you know, the neshama was raised and nurtured. So for that reason, over here, Ois Tezayin, the Rashba, one of the Talmidim of the Rashba, in the Sefer Torah HaMincha, writes that that's why one of the activities that precipitates nevuah is music. It says, V'alkein ko adam ye'arev lo kolos klei shir, since the neshama is used to this in its infancy, k'shekshanam shomas elu ha'kolos zokras ma'ona harishon, when the neshama hears music, it remembers its first, you know, tekufa, its first period of its life, before it was created. Shomas elu akolos umaoros l'simcho l'chedva. It, you know, reaches elevated states of satisfaction and of happiness. Valkein klei hanigun maorim nevuah. Therefore, it's music that precipitates nevuah, a spiritual experience. The Rambam echoes this too in Yisod HaTorah. That's why he says that uficha b'nei neviim. Vifnehem nova v'toif v'chalil. Neviim always had with them flutes and harps. As the pasuk says in Sefer Malachim, v'yokin nogin hamenagin v'tehi alav ruach Hashem. Okay, so nevuah is typically precipitated by negina, by song, because negina is what speaks to the neshama. I think, I never saw this in the Mefarshim, we'll talk about this, that that's why Torah is called a shira. Torah itself is Va'ata Kisvu Lachem as Hashira Hazos. Why is Torah a song? And many ask, what does Torah have to do with a song? Maybe it has like the rhythm of a song, and there's lots of different comparisons one can make to a song, but maybe in its most basic sense, it's similar to a song, and that just like song is the language of the neshama, Torah as well is the language of the neshama. But when a person sings, therefore, that opens up the neshama. It's a sefer called Or HaMeir. certain rabbi, one of the Talmidim of the Maggid of Mezrich, was of course the main, the heir of the Baal Shem Tov, spiritual heir of the Baal Shem Tov. So he quotes in the name there of the Baal Shem Tov, one time the Baal Shem Tov heard a certain individual singing, and by virtue of the fact that he heard him singing, he was able to see all of his activities of the past, the mitzvahs, the averos, everything was, became obvious to him simply by hearing him sing. How did it become obvious? By hearing him sing? Because when a person sings, his neshama opens up. It's like a doorway into the neshama, and the Baal Shem Tov, who was attuned to this frequency, was able to gaze into this person's neshama, once the person was singing. And whether you believe, that story does anything for you or not, that's what singing, is about, is the language of the neshama, and opens up the neshama. Because of that, singing itself is not avodas Hashem, but what it does is it makes a person capable to absorb avodas Hashem in a new way, because your soul is opened up. It's a catalyst for avodas Hashem, if not avodas Hashem itself. In that sense, it's similar to Simcha. In the Sefer Hachsharas HaAvreichem, which is written by the same author as the Eish Kodesh, the Piazetzna, so he has a Sefer that we wrote for young Talmidim called Choyves HaTalmidim, for elementary school students, and then he wrote a Sefer for more senior experienced Talmidim called Hachsharas HaAvreichem. It was a sequel to Choyves HaTalmidim. So here he writes, don't be perplexed by the fact that you find so many people singing and they're not of high spiritual caliber. Don't be surprised by the fact that they're great Jewish singers and they're not that religiously committed. He says, because there are good singers amongst the Yaakov. I don't know why that was surprising to him. All the nigun is an expression of the soul. Doesn't tell you where the soul is holding. It doesn't tell you what's inside of the soul. All it is an expression of the soul. So if a person opens up the soul, who's to say good things will emerge from that? Whatever you put in while your soul is open, while the keys, to the heart is open, that doesn't necessarily mean that good things will happen. Bad things can happen. All it does is it opens up the soul. What you put in, during that sensitive time, it's up to you. So the soul is open, yes, and whatever is in there is going to come out. If there's darkness, it's going to be darkness. If there's light, there's going to be light. And while a person does this and his soul is open, he can, or she can do things that will impact the soul in a unique and impactful and profound way, but it's up to what you do with that foundation or with that, in that context that you've created. And in that sense, it's similar to Simcha. He writes over here, Kumoshi Yeshem Shnei Anashim Simechem. Simcha is great. That doesn't mean every time a person is smiling and happy and joyful, that's avodas Hashem. There are many people who are happy and joyful and have nothing to do with serving the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All it means is that is the context through which you can be productive in avodas Hashem. But simcha is just a platform, is a catalyst for whatever you use it for. You can be productive in wasting your life on, on other things too. So simcha, if channeled properly, is very productive. Song as well, if channeled properly, opens up the heart and allows a person to affect himself or herself in a very profound way, but it's up to you what you do with the, with the heart while it's open and while it's vulnerable in this way. It's one of the keys of the soul that allows you to impact yourself in a profound way. So therefore, writes Rabbi Nachman over here, the Kutim Aran Torah Gimel, it's a quite often quoted piece in the Kutim Aran, that if a person hears a niggun that was composed by a Rasha, so then the niggun will have overtones of that person's soul. They're embedded, baked into the niggun. And if there's darkness in his soul, there'll be darkness in that niggun too, because all that happens when you sing a niggun is it gets channeled into the music. So Rav Yaakov Hillel writes over here in his Tshuvas Vayoshev Hayam, this is the 20th source over here, Oyschav, that's why even if you have instrumental music where there's no words at all, nonetheless, there's a mystical power or a mystical component to the music. And he writes, "Uvufrat shekach siguli yesh b'musical lo arer b'hashomer oisin rikshol shehem kafid das v'kavanos shalom mechaber." If a person has hate in his heart, that will come across even in the symphony that that they compose, or even if the words are not. The lyrics and the themes are not harmful, but there's darkness in his soul or soul that's going to come across, in the music too. That's why there were many who were opposed to listening to the Nazi composers. Even if, maybe it's because we just don't want to have anything to do with it at all, but there are those that claim that you can feel the cruelty and the harshness and you know, and all of the you know the horrible you know aspects of the you know the Nazi belief system in the music. It oozes out of the music, and that's kind of echoing this. The same idea is that the nisham of a person, their intentions, come across in the music. Even if you're not, you know, sensitive to the different, you know, to the different tones of music and how, you know, what is harsh music, what is softer music, it comes across perhaps in subliminal ways. It gets embedded, you know, in the music. So the very power of music is also perhaps, you know, its downfall if it's coming from an improper source. So therefore, Rav Moshe has a tshuva, a well-known tshuva, writes about a certain composer of music, singer, who he you know labels as a Baal Aveira. As a person, wasn't an Api Kairos, but they were singing Jewish music, but perhaps conveying their concerts and songs using inappropriate, although well-meaning, but inappropriate methods. If you know who he's talking about, great. If not, you can find out another time. But Rav Moshe is talking about a well-known Jewish singer who we're all familiar with, which I'm just not inclined to discuss him on a personal level. But that's what Rav Moshe writes over here. A person is a Baal Aveira. A Baal Aveira. So what's the status with his music? So Rav Moshe says, well, you know, a person who's a Baal Aveira, a person who's an Apikoros, and authors a Sefer Torah, and writes a Sefer Torah, so we would get rid of the Sefer Torah, because to keep the Sefer Torah around is considered to be a celebration of the individual. And the Pasuk says in Sefer Mishlei, the shame is Rishoyim Yirkov. The names of Rishoyim should rot. We don't want to, you know, kind of endorse the name of a Rasha, so we get rid of the Sefer Torah. But Rav Moshe writes, he doesn't think a nigun is the same kind of endorsement to the individual to leave the nigun around. It's not a Dover Shebekdusha, says Rav Moshe, it's a Dover Sholcho. It's like if a Apikoros would build a shovel. It's a couch. It's you know there isn't any inherent kedusha like a sefer Torah. One of our Moshe's contemporaries, the Debrett Sina Rav, who was Rav here in the United States in Brooklyn, has tshuvas called Be'er Moshe, which are quite well used. He disagreed with Rav Moshe about the music of this individual, and he said, no, if you leave the music around, it will turn into a celebration of the individual, even though some of his activities were not approved and not endorsed and were, you know, could be viewed as, you know, as an Aveira. And I think to a large extent he was right. I think it has turned into a celebration of the individual, and we have overlooked some of the indiscretions that happened, although well-meaning, that did happen along the way. But Rav Moshe felt it wasn't going to be seen as an endorsement and a celebration of the individual, and therefore the music was a Dover Shochol. But at the same time, Rav Moshe says over here on the second line, he says, but even if the music is okay, it's not viewed as a celebration of the individual, and Rav Moshe doesn't think this person was similar to an Apikoros, you know, but not in that same category. For Rav Moshe, you know, and therefore we wouldn't necessarily have to be as harsh as we would be, you know, to the person more severe Baal Aveira. For Rav Moshe does say that even though the nigunim are shalcho, im ken api nigunim eilu sha'asa achar shasani shmueni nami yoyser noyte shein leser lunagim b'hem, he doesn't think there's an issue to sing them. Nonetheless, it's appropriate for b'nei Torah or b'al nefesh, those are a little bit more careful and petilious, kevin sheyesh gam tam lesser. There is a reason to be opposed to it. Even though it's a weak reason, Rav Moshe feels there is something objectionable to listening to the music. And I think where Rav Moshe here is driving at, even though Rav Moshe at least we don't find Kabbalistic themes in Rav Moshe, I think he's tapping into this same idea, is that the neshama of the composer and the singer comes across in the music. And if the person isn't of the highest religious standing, that'll come across in the music. So to ask for the music, no. Because Rav Moshe didn't think it would lead to a celebration of the individual. But here one might disagree. But Rav Moshe feels it still, you know, it comes across in the music. So Rav Moshe says it does not prohibit it, but a Baal Nefesh, a Ben Torah, should be machmir. So I happen to think that all secular music that's innocuous, certainly instrumental music, symphonies and all that, and all, you know, all those kinds of things. So even if the composer was, you know, I don't know how many of these people, you know, are Uraim Vishleimim, but you know, if the person's not usher, right, or innocuous music, you know, regular, you know, harmless music, it's okay. But you know, there's certainly an inyan to stay away from it. The Baal Nefesh, Ben Torah, should be Machmer Al Atmo, the same way that Rav Moshe treats the music, you know, of this individual over here that he's discussing. I think those would be the same. I think it's permitted, I can understand, you know, why though one might want to stay away from it, because the soul of the individual gets embedded in the music. If the person isn't of the highest spiritual standing, it could come across. One final, though, issue that really needs to be dealt with in this context, we've talked about religious music, we've talked about music that has harmful lyrics and themes, and we talked about, you know, more innocuous music, or maybe even instrumental music. We talked about being Maguire music, and you convert music, and, you know, and the appropriateness of doing that. What about music that's Jewish music? Jewish music. Jewish music. So Gemara says over here, Masechtas Sanhedrin, Oschav Beis, the 22nd source, Tana Rabbana, Korei Pasuk Shal Shir HaShirim, a person who reads a Pasuk of Shir HaShirim, Va'oisai Soi Kemin Zemer, he makes it into a song. Va'Korei Pasuk Beis HaMishtal, so he reads a Pasuk and he reads on the bars, and he's singing the Pasuk in the bar. Kadosh Baruch Hu wears, you know, puts on sackcloth and mourns, and he says, the Torah puts on sackcloth and stands before HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'Oimeres in the middle of the second line. Ribbono shel Olam asuuni banecha kekinor shemenagnu b'leitzim. They made me into a ditty. They made me into, you know, a bar song. So the Torah is upset about being manipulated and abused in this way. So much so. Now, over here, we're talking about a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. So Rashi and most Rishonim say, well, if the Shir HaShirim is a song already, if you can't use Shir HaShirim, you certainly can't use any other parts of the Torah. One could have said differently. One could have said, no, Shir HaShirim is really holy. Shir HaShirim is already a song, but it's between us and the Ribbono Shel Olam. So therefore, you can't take Shir HaShirim and channel in a different direction. It was already used as a song between us and the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Don't make a song out of it for something else. Other parts of the Torah, maybe not as sensitive. However, most Rishonim do not assume that way. Most assume that if it's Shir HaShirim, which is already a song, you can't use it as a song in another, you know, for music in another context, then certainly the Torah itself, which was never meant as a song, it would be a violation of the spirit of what the Torah was there for, to use it as a song. So therefore, the Mishnah Berurah writes over here, Oyschav Gimel Kasev Bilikutim Ariel Shaloi Kedin Hu Shemesharim B'Mishta Oydcha Kiani Sani. He's opposed to people who sing songs to Oydcha Kiani Sani at a party, who Kaigavna with Simchas Mireyos at a party, we're singing Torah songs. The Mishnah Berurah here is opposed to it. You should only sing the zmiros that are in the bencher or whatever text you have for zmiros. But other than that, really shouldn't be singing psukim as a song. So much so, look over here, Ois Chavdal, the Sefer Chassidim says, even as a lullaby to kids when they're going to sleep, you put them to sleep with psukim and things like that, is really a misuse of the psukim and a violation of their inherent kedusha. Mishi yesho katan muto baresa, you have a little baby that's sitting in the crib. Kadesh lo yivka lo yiranenu lo. You can't sing Jewish songs to put them to bed to quiet them from crying. But it's not only psukim in the Torah. Ramesha extends this even further. Ramesha writes over here, Oyschav Hey. It's not only psukim in the Torah. Even mamari chazal also are meant to teach us, you know, how to live life, and are not meant as lyrics, as fodder for Jewish music, to, you know, plumb the depths of Torah in order to find good lyrics for songs. And Ramesha writes, even though I know people do this, it says over here on the third line, Ramesha thinks this is, you know, black on white, that this is prohibited. I don't understand any reason to allow this. Obviously, there are many people who are composing these kinds of songs. Ramesha says, again, I don't know why they allowed it. And again, I always say, people go to Pesach programs and they see them doing things. They set the table on the first day Yom Tov for the second day Yom Tov. They see them setting up Hadlakas Neiros in the lobby, which is a bracha levatoah. So they see them doing all these things. They say, well, how could it be at a Pesach program where there's so many rabbis that are speaking that they're allowing these things? The answer is, the dirty secret is, they don't ask the rabbis those things. They ask the rabbis, what are you going to speak about between Hamar, if not where to set up Hadlakas Neiros Shabbos? So you'll see the rabbis will take the candles and put them on their table, you know, in the dining room. No one's lighting. The people in the halacha are not lighting in the lobby. It's a bracha levatoah. Or, you know, setting the table. First day Yom Tov, second day Yom Tov, we could discuss, you know, in a hotel. But you should never bring rayas from caterers. We don't know. And whatever happens in the Pesach program, or in Jewish media for that matter, there are lots of things that get promoted in Jewish media. Does that mean it has inherently the haskama of, you know, of the Chachmei Hadar? No, not necessarily. Some people in Jewish media ask questions. Some do not. And, you know, so you don't, I'm not here to condemn them, but you don't bring proofs. Just because something is out there, is it even in the Judaica store, doesn't necessarily mean, you know, every canvas sukkah is kosher just because it's sold at sukkah, you know, fill in the blank. So they don't necessarily ask shilas. They ask shilas afterwards, but not necessarily in producing, you know, the item in the first place. So Ramesha says, there's this industry out there But Rav Meisher himself says, I don't know, you know, necessarily what they're relying on. So I'll tell you what I think they're relying on. They're relying on the following. The Yad Ramah says over here, look back at Oyscha Beis, one of the commentaries on the Gemara Masechta of the Sanhedrin. Yad Ramah says that if your intention is l'shebuchei beila kadosh baruch hu derech nigin, your intention is dveikos, your intention is not just as a form of entertainment, your intention is to come closer to a kadosh baruch hu through singing this song, that is a license to sing these psukim or mamari chazal for inspiration. And that's what the Mishnah Berurah says. If you look back at Oyscha Gimel, the Mishnah Berurah says, bebeis, in the middle of the second line, bebeis hakneses l'regolim mitzvah l'zamer. In shul, it's nice to daven. Some really litvisha communities didn't sing at all because they felt it's going to distract you from the meaning of the words. But that, I don't know if that, how popular that is today. But so there's an inyan of singing, because that singing, again, opens up the neshama, and if you're using it to come closer to a Kadosh Baruch Hu for dveikos, to inspire you to have, you know, to greater levels of avodas Hashem, you know, so then that is something that is appropriate and something that is praiseworthy, and one has to make every attempt to, you know, to uplift the, you know, the songs that are being sung. And I would hope that, you know, more would be in this spirit of dveikus tikka songs. If you listen to Jewish music, you know, and I'm not a big expert, but I listen enough to know that there's two kinds of songs. There's some that are a little bit more pop-oriented, some a little bit more dveikus-oriented. I naturally gravitate to those, but I think that's really, you know, the heter in the first place to sing these kinds of songs is l'shem dveikus. Unfortunately, a lot of times that's not the intention. And that's why sometimes you have these concerts of Jewish entertainment, the Chol HaMoed trip, it's nice, but it really doesn't lead to that same dveiko. So that's where Rav Pinkus over here laments. And Oyscha Vav in his Sefer Sha'arim B'Tfilah says, sometimes we don't see people walking out of these concerts, Lo Re'inu Shachrei Erev Shira Chasidus, and I think he's discussing a Kumzitz even, Shemitach Ha'alofim Shebilu Shama Shos Rabos, people spent so many hours there, we don't find people running out to the Beis Medrash or running to Shul and davening with greater Kavanah. That's not, you know, probably trying to get to the concession stand. We don't find people running out to daven with greater kavana, but that really should be the intention. But even if that is the intention, I think it's important to mention the comment of Rav Matasyahu Salman, who's the Mashgiach, of course, of Beis Medrash Gavoa in Lakewood. So he writes over here in his Sefer Matnas Chaim, even if that is your intention, it's dveikus, which is fantastic. That's not the same as real avodas Hashem, as real davening and real learning and, you know, all those kinds of things. It can open up the heart, but if a person spends all of his time opening up his heart but doesn't put anything in, again, so then all singing does is make a person conducive, you know, makes a person open to change, makes a person open to spirituality. But if there's no, you know, shmooze in the middle of the kumzitz, if there's no Torah in the middle of all of it, or it doesn't, you know, a person could be engaged in, you know, real Torah and Yerushalayim and Tefillah and all those kinds of things, and instead all they're doing is singing, going from one singing occasion to next singing occasion, but you're not putting anything in, you're not using it for anything productive, you kind of miss the point. You know, of the whole thing. He said, he says, sometimes you get so caught up in the Jewish music industry, even if it is l'shem dveikus, you miss out on what is the ikar, you know, what is the plate that holds the food and what is the food that it's supposed to be holding. So a person, you know, has to understand the importance and the role of all of it. So even in the Jewish music industry, I would think it would be, you know, we should focus our attention on dveikus tikka songs and those kinds of things. And even then, to understand what it's there for, it's to open up the soul, you know, to put in real work, real Torah, real Yerushalayim. Someone from NCSY, one of the leaders of NCSY, told me, never, never, never criticize the kumzitz. He says, it's changed lives. Changed lives. And I don't doubt it, for sure. I'm not arguing with that. But it has to be understood what the purpose is. The purpose is to open up a person's heart, and then to use it, to use it appropriately in that way. I think it is important, though. You know, even though we kind of said it's best to have dveikus tikka songs, and I happen to like those, and I think those are the best kind of Jewish music, best we have to offer. It should bring a person closer to Hashem, and even then, you should use that as a springboard for real avodas Hashem. You know, the stuff that requires sometimes, you know, the heavy lifting of Judaism, working on ourselves and things like that. At the same time, I think there is a place for the Jewish music industry. You know, we live in a culture, we're not in a bubble. We're exposed to other forms of entertainment. We're exposed to other forms of music. And I think it would be, you know, it's important to note that we need to fill that void. If we would say, you can't have music unless it's dveikus tikka music, people will unfortunately be listening, you know, the other alternatives are much, much worse. So I think in order to fill that void, right, we need the Jewish media. The Jewish media fills a tremendous void in our lives. Without the Jewish media, no one is necessarily opening up Tehillim on Shabbos afternoon. If it's not going to be this magazine, it'll be some, you know, worse novel or newspaper or something else. So I think we need this stuff, even if it's not all, you know, perfect. We need it. We need the Jewish music industry as well. Fills an important void. Certainly keeps us away from things that are worse. And it certainly keeps people at least in the orbit of Judaism, right? Even if at the far reaches. But at least it keeps us in the orbit. So I think it's all important. But I think, you know, at least to understand what it's here to accomplish. It's here to accomplish, ultimately, that Jewish music at its highest levels should be dveikus by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And even then, is there to open up our hearts to receive and to be able to be conducive, you know, to be in tune with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Okay. Okay, no pressure.